neighbors, I'm freaking. I've had such a weekend. I think I must be turning to God. Don't say we're not good to you here at Celtic Underground Towers. This is a free podcast just chatting about football. It's me and Eddie Pearson laughing at Rangers, talking about Celtic and talking about the game on January the 2nd. Now, don't say we're not good to you. This is available to absolutely everybody, but we especially like all our paid subscribers because they are wonderful people. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, talking to Eddie Pearson. And if you like what you hear, there's tons of this stuff. If you subscribe, there's free subscriptions, and you can do that at theCelticUnderground.substack.com. And there's paid subscriptions where you get additional content with exclusive interviews and more stuff like this coming up as we run along into 2025. You can pick up your podcast wherever you get, so although you can go to the Substack app and you can watch us in person, you can also download it wherever you get your content normally and your podcast normally. Just go on to Substack because I can't be bothered explaining how you do it, and they're really good at it. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Eddie Pearson. We're here now. It's the end of 2024 podcast. It's not going to be a podcast review because we've not done any research. You wouldn't expect any different from myself and Eddie Pearson. How are you doing, Eddie? Did you have a good Christmas?
I had an excellent Christmas. You had me panicked here for a minute when you said the end of 2024. I thought, I've not done any homework for this.
I can remember who we played yesterday.
I can remember who we played yesterday and probably Sunday, but was it Sunday? Was it Thursday? I can't remember. But other than that, no chance. I'm just going to have to wing this completely, but I'm looking forward to having a chat with you anyway.
That's a bit like as I was going up to, I think it was a Motherwell game actually. I'm walking up the road and my dad's not been well, so it was just me going up to meet my brother, my nephew. So walking up, I'm thinking, I don't actually know who we are playing today. No idea. I was just, as they say, I just knew there was going to be a show and the Glasgow Celtic would be there.
Finest team in Scotland. I think the statistics would prove that as well.
Yes.
You know, so, 19 trophies.
Actually, for the 2024 year in review, I am desperately hunting out the WhatsApp message that you sent me. That Brendan Rodgers was obviously, if you listen to Brendan Rodgers' pre-match interview prior to the St Johnstone game, somebody sent that to Brendan. Because it was very, I'm not wanting to brag, but if you've seen the stats that are going around, we are brilliant.
Yes. Not bad for a team that, what do they say, no tempo and can't take their chances or something like that. Yes, that was very good.
That was
I'm sure I've got that somewhere here.
A team that passes the ball slowly and can't take their chances. That was his slight dig at everybody.
I'm afraid it's in here somewhere, but it's in amongst so much other Celtic DAS stuff and, you know, like pictures of the players at the darts and the constant stuff about the Pope with all the referees. You know, it's all, we've all been sent to it in our WhatsApps, but you know.
Well, I'll quickly run through it. Scottish champions Celtic have had an unforgettable last 12 months. One game left, so now no games left. It's the lowest defeats in all competitions in a calendar year in over a century. After 53 games, we've been defeated only twice, once in the league at Tynecastle when beaten, cheated. That was the one that Brendan was saying that beaten was incompetent, wasn't it? And the Champions League against Dortmund. Fewest defeats since 1919 when we were undefeated for the whole year but only played 40 games.
Fuhr, which is Fuhrer's, obviously. So, not losing to St Johnstone. First time in over 20 years we've been undefeated in all competitions through a full calendar year, and the third time in 100 years. 80% win record, highest percentage in the last 50 years. Undefeated in five games against Rangers, four wins and a draw. Won all three domestic trophies. That includes beating Rangers twice. Most decorated club in Europe by winning 117th, 118th, and 119th trophies. Head to head, if you combine both the Rangers, we are head to head superior to theirs in the Glasgow Derby. Two clean sheets away from home in the Champions League for the first time since the tournament was rebranded in 1992. 37 Premiership games, 38 Premiership games with one defeat, four League Cup games, no defeats, five Scottish Cup games, no defeats, six Champions League games, one defeat, and sitting lots of points clear. And I can't be bothered reading the rest. So,
What a
yes, it's
team
been a
to be
good
alive.
2024.
What a team to be alive. We keep talking about this, and folk keep saying, we need to say to the youngins, it's not always like this. That's starting to sound a bit. I've been saying it's not always like this for about 10 years now, my wage. And they're like, I don't think I believe you anymore. I think it is always like this. You think about it. See, if the last time our Rangers won the league, say in 2012, right, you would be
Well,
the
remember
best part of.
they won the COVID season that nobody
No,
saw.
but let me finish it.
Oh,
You
yeah.
would be 30 now and have never had an opportunity to legally celebrate your team winning the league in a pub. 30 years of age, because if you turned 18 in 2012, you couldn't do it in the COVID season anyway, so it didn't count. And now you've just not had an opportunity to. And in that time, you've had three celebrations of trophies, unless you count the success of the Petrified Panthers, I think, as they're called. And their fantastic success at the second attempt to try, and it's just, well, it's what a time to be. We said it before, years ago. Seeing years to come, this is the type of stuff that when you looked at the league records when in the 90s, and you would look at like the nine in a row and the European Cup and stuff like that, and then you would even look further back, you'd look at the six in a row in the early 1900s, and you think, God, that must have been a great time to be a Celtic supporter. This is the moment. This is the moment to be a Celtic supporter. Does it get much better than this?
I was seeing similar. So, as I say, my dad wasn't a football. So, St Anthony had my seat because he was giving his ticket to somebody else. And we were talking about as the scores were coming through. So, this is he couldn't understand why it was just a bit of a murmur and a laugh when Motherwell scored the first and the second goals. And he's saying to me, why is it not the normally be a huge cheer? And I said, because. See, if you're 30 or under, Rangers are just a permanent figure of fun. They're not serious contenders. They are not serious people. So, for a large chunk of our support, all you ever do is just laugh at Rangers. You don't sell. You don't need to celebrate. We're winning the league. We're going to win, two, possibly, probably a treble.
I think there's a difference between them as a team and dealing with their support. It was good yesterday when the stuff's coming through and you're getting, what, 3-1? And then a bit later you go, what, how's the 3-1 again? Oh, one chopped off. And then next night it's 2-2. Ah, come on, I know. But the main thing was, I can't wait to go up the road and switch on Rangers Rabble on YouTube and watch them all absolutely
Yes.
gutted. The actual enjoyment at the moment is secondary now to the social media that goes around it. The days a decade ago of just reveling in the fact that there's a wee guy with a tranny radio listening to it and trying to tell you the fixtures. You're going to get back in and go on to follow and go on to Twitter and see them in absolute meltdown. That's where the real fun is now.
Because the fun's listening to completely delusional people who and obviously there's different a bit like us, there's different brands of Rangers ones, so it's really clear that Hand and Heart they're of a similar age to us because their point of reference as to who Rangers are is basically everything they go back to is who Rangers were in about 1991, 92, 93. That's who Rangers are to them, and that's always their point of reference. So they're a get up and at 'em. Even actually, so I always felt when late 80s, early 90s, and there was this whole raft of new people who became interested in football and interested in Rangers. Rangers fans were much more likely to be into Bon Jovi, wear marble denim, not my cup of tea type music. And you can even tell that. See the intro music, because obviously I listen to Hand in the Heart. I'm having to listen to it more. I've started to. I'm going to have to subscribe to it in a minute because I listen to it so much because I'm losing so much. Even their intro music is very, Rangers stuff. I've just shown my prejudices about people who like
I
certain type of music.
suppose you've got them on your sleeve. I'll give you that. It's to your credit. But there's always been that historical difference between us. We were always. This is the thing that you always argue with me about. We were always instinctively different for them in terms of our culture and our approach. And it might be that people are getting harder and the world's getting tougher, and maybe bits of that are flattening out. But when you get down to it, there are fundamental differences. And it's the way that we will accept when things are going well, or we'll deal with it when they aren't. But see their desire to believe that they are better than they actually are. See that wee spell a fortnight ago where we had drawn at Tannadice, and guys like Keith Jackson were jumping in and going, "Oh, well, could have a league title, league challenge on my hands here." And you're like, "What? You're supposed to know what you're talking about in terms of football." That willingness to believe is quite admirable in a way. Despite all the evidence to the contrary, I think that we do this, we do that. I mean, like Mark Dingwall actually put up and follow. Yeah, we win the next couple of games, we beat them. The hunt is on. 3 games to go, 9 points of a difference. We could just look at that game, 14 points ahead of them. They were talking about we could come out of this only 6 points behind, and then it's game on. I mean, you don't need to be good at maths to figure out that's not happening.
It's this thing of because they didn't lose to us in the cup, a bit like the 3-3 game at the end of last season, because they didn't lose to us in the cup, obviously until to penalties, but in terms of an over 90 minutes, and then they win a league game and we draw a league game, that window of the team playing really well is now 2 months. What?
They
Because
love a
one game was in
3-3
November
draw.
and one game was in December. Is that how it's 2 months?
Oh, they're mad for a 3-3. They go mental when a 3-3 comes up. It's the best thing that could possibly happen to them. It's like, yeah, but let's look at it statistically. I mean, we've not spoken properly since the cup final. And realistically, we played for about 15 minutes and we scored 3 goals. And then we stopped playing again and they managed to sneak back into it. But see, when we just lifted our game ever so slightly, we blew them away. They were clinging on. And they did well at clinging on. But they were just clinging on to our coattails. And when we decided to lift our game, bang, goal, goal, goal. We had to take the left back off and replace him because he was getting such a doing. He was going to cost them the entire trophy. And then the guy they replaced him with cost them the trophy anyway. But that made me feel as if, see, if you're going to take that as evidence that you can compete, then that's fine. You keep thinking that because you're never going to get better if that's what you think, what it takes to compete. And that's their danger. They don't ever look at the facts. They look at what they want the facts to look like. They look at what they want to feel. But they don't ever look at the evidence in front of their eyes or whether they're good enough or not good enough. The only thing I would say is maybe we did the same in the 90s. I don't know. I don't think we did, but maybe we did.
No, I don't think we. No, I we weren't talking about. Well, obviously, not having podcasts the way they were, but certainly the social group I was in, you weren't talking like they do. Rangers are a club who just win everything. No, you're not. The very not in this century, mate. You're not. The very fact that we've won so many trophies and overtaken you, and you've had 2 goes at it with two different clubs, shows that you're not a club that wins everything. They're just.
We were talking earlier today on a group, and we were saying, that this idea of blaming the referees and, denying the reality of the evidence your own eyes of your team not good enough. One of the other guys went and said, I mean, we didn't do that. And I says, well, we did blame the referees. The difference was we knew we weren't good enough and we knew the referees were out to get us. It was a different thing than any, we accepted that Willie Faulkner was never going to win it. But that guy that went and kicked, what was his name, the referee that went and let them kick off after we'd scored against them, we were still celebrating in the jungle. That's no on. But the team that we had weren't good enough to win. And the fact we'd managed to get ahead of the game a wee bit and he then let them kick off, we were up against it because we weren't good enough and the referees were out to get us. For them, it's much simpler than that. They're just not good enough.
And again, it just demonstrates the delusional element of them. They're having 10, 11 days in the newspapers to discuss a small shirt pull when one of their players had their foot on the line of the box. And our comparable of when we were shit is to talk about the fact that there was only three Celtic players in the Celtic half when Rangers got to kick off in a game because we
Yeah,
were
but
eight of our players were still out celebrating.
What you need to remember, though, is that not the VAR, but the assistant VAR who didn't make the decision has a kind of fiend-y name.
Yeah.
So there's your conspiracy, if ever you've saw it. Frank, Francis, Connor, sounds like O'Connor, sounds like, you know, sounds like basically it's a plot by the Catholic Church. Absolutely, it's a plot. You know, it all goes back to Bella Houston, 1982, when we were all there, we were all told, young people of Scotland, become referees. That's what it was all about. And they've convinced themselves of something. To be fair, though, Don Robertson's refereeing again. The game on Thursday, exit innings, boy. But, you know, and Nick Walsh is on VAR. But, you know, putting that one side for a second, generally speaking, this is madness in their part.
You know, that's what we were doing. And then I see that Butland is now turning into a bad guy. Do you know how, everyone's identified low to the left is where Butland lets in stuff. The other thing is, they don't appear to have noticed this. Because I never hear on any, you know, as I say, I'm increasingly listening to Heart and Hand every time you lose, so it's more and more. You never hear anybody saying, another goal low to Butland's left. And see the way, because I was looking at how he dives. You know how, is it again, Celtic Dower references, you know how there was two goalkeepers in Sabutio? There was the one who was sort of tall, with his, you know, his hands were straight up in the air like he was diving into a swimming pool. And then there's the other one who was sort of squat with his hands down by his side. The only way I can describe it, the way Butland dives to his left, is like the guy who was squat with his hands down his side. If you ever watch him, when he dives to his left, he doesn't stick his left hand out. He just sort of falls over. And he doesn't push off with his feet. He just falls over to his left. I mean, even the one that you know, Sports Scene last night, they were saying was a wonder goal by Motherwell. If you look at it, he does that sort of falling over thing with his arms by his side. And then, obviously, Motherwell's first goal.
I'm no expert in terms of goalkeeping coaching, but I would suggest the main piece of advice to give a goalkeeper is when you're coming to try and clear the ball at a corner, you don't punch it in towards the goal. You tend to try and punch it away. I mean, I know there's a lot of complexities in terms of modern-day coaching and things like that, but I'm still of the opinion that perhaps hitting it away from your own goal is probably a better tactic. I mean, would I be wrong on that? You're the goalkeeper. You tell me.
No, I would say punching the ball into the back of your net would be sort of lesson number one. In fact, you take a kid, how did the lesson go? He's not for being a goalkeeper. He just went for it and deliberately punched the ball back into his own goal. So
suboptimal, no. I think it's called. Suboptimal in terms of what you're trying to achieve. You know? and there's a wee bit of me thought, it's a soft free kick, but I can see why it's given. So I'll not lose too much sleep over it. And the other one was offside that they got yesterday. But so I can understand why that was. But this is a guy who has always been bumping around English football in terms of a reserve or a sub. You know, and was never a first team choice regularly. He didn't really make it. And the fact they brought him in for 6 months and they keep saying, we're a player trading club, so we're going to sell him for 40 million, we're going to sell him for 30 million. They convinced themselves of these things. They deny the evidence of their own eyes to create narratives when they think things are going well. And that's the thing that's hardest for them.
I mean, the thing about Butland, he did that. He's obviously a reasonable goalkeeper, right? But he did that thing that a reasonable player would do. He goes to a new club, gets it, and gets told you're the number one. So he's a new lease of life, and at the start, he's playing well because he's feeling really self confident. But as you know, the term you always use, he's reverted to the mean. He's reverted to the standard of what he is, and that is chucking goals in.
And he's obviously supported by the quality he's got in front of him. Those two centre-halves, proper. See, when they said they were signing a guy that was a captain of a team in Holland, I foolishly thought, oh, that guy must have something. He's a donkey. He's an absolute donkey. Sterling, who they said couldn't play right-back because he couldn't play a couple of games in a trot, has been playing at centre-half for the last three. He doesn't look like a player either. All of a sudden, Raskin's their new hope again. He's their old new hope, and he's now their new hope. You know, he's back in. They just don't seem to have anything. They're left back. That boy, signing a Brazilian for Malta, he's going to go for millions. Why is he playing in Malta? Has anybody asked that question? Or was it Cyprus? I always get those two mixed up.
Yeah, but, I think it was Cyprus.
Anyway, it could be Ibiza. But you get my general point, you know. It's just, they're just no go to it at all. You know, so the fact that they don't have that quality, I just feel as if that with that around them, we must be going into the game on Thursday with a view to, we can do some real damage here. And I don't just mean scoring goals. I mean real damage to the institution of that club if we get a result on Thursday.
I mean, we're talking about it at half-time. And I was joking, saying, imagine they lose to Motherwell today and then they beat us on the second, not in terms of anything impactful on us, but it would almost be the end. It'd be the worst of all worlds for them. You know, at least when we lost 4-0 to St Mirren under Mowbray, the plaster was pulled off quickly and he just had to go. If they were to beat us, they can't sack him after beating us, so they then have to limp along for another couple of games. And everybody will know that this is a guy who's losing his job at some point. I mean, I don't think it'll be us. But, you know.
He's a lame duck manager. I'll be honest with you. See, if you offered me a draw just now and we stayed 14 points clear of them, I'd take it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I want to beat them. Obviously, we always want to beat them. But these games, there's always an unpredictable element to these games. You know, the fact that 3-3 game last season where Matondo steps up towards the end and Yang just doesn't track him properly and he hits a ball in and they get a fluky goal out of it, you know, and they get a draw that they didn't deserve. These things can happen in games. So if you're offering me a draw, I'd probably take it just now and then just let them get back to going to Easter Road the game after and dropping points there. But if we do play to our abilities and they play to their abilities, we'll probably put about 3 or 4 past them based on the way they're playing just now. You know, yeah. Because we are vast and we kind of owe them it. Because the cup final wasn't good. Do you know what I mean? Fair point of view. I was delighted we won the trophy. I'm not arguing any of that. But I don't think we did ourselves justice. I don't think we gave a good account of ourselves during that game. And I would like to see us actually play to our capabilities. The way we did yesterday. Because I thought we were terrific yesterday. You know, I thought right for the world go. And also, I thought we were very good on St. Stephen's Day as well. I felt as if there was a lot of criticism in the first half. And I didn't think it was really merited. I thought we played really, really well. And yeah, we needed the penalty to break down the Motherwell defence, but we did it and then we started knocking about lovely. So if we play to that level, we should do them a lot of damage. And yeah, I think it probably will mean the end of their manager, but given he's on what, $2.5 million a year, I'm not sure that they'd be able to get short of him too easily and bring in the next one. I think they might go for a sort of short term somebody to get him to the end of the season, because why would you come into this mess just now and take over? Because that's no work for them the last 3 or 4 times. They've always brought in a new manager who's picking up the pieces and then starting to get beat left, right and centre. So he's damaged below the waterline before he even starts. So I think they might go to the summer and then have another look. There's some talk that the Southampton manager was at the last couple of Rangers games, which I think is really interesting. Maybe he's a Rangers fan, I don't know. But you know how they like to get their next manager in to have a wee look at the team before they commit. So it'd be interesting to see if there was something in that. But no, if you're offering me a draw just now, I'll take it, because I just went in there and out. But I do think we could do them a lot of damage if we get a result. You know, in terms of institutionally, it could be their Mars bar game.
Well, so again, when we were talking about it, the flip side of that is, after having drawn with Motherwell, although we were talking about it, they were behind at Motherwell, but having drawn with Motherwell, can you imagine how toxic the atmosphere will be at Ibrox if they go behind a couple of goals to us by half time? And there's no Celtic fans there to bat for. There's no Celtic fans there to make them balance out and go, we can't behave like that because we can't behave like this in front of them.
I think they'll get booed onto the pitch. Never mind get booed. You know, you need to remember that this is the first time they're going to be back after 2 terrible results. See, if it wasn't us they were playing, they'd be getting a doing right for the word go for the majority of their home support. Because, you know, the result against St Mirren and the result yesterday in Motherwell merits them getting a hard time. But the fact that they're up against us might save them initially. But it's all going to be simmering under the surface and they're not going to be able to hide it. What I thought was dead interesting was I was listening to the phone in and stuff like that on the way home, and this guy's actually talking about no turning up to a Celtic Rangers game. You know, half the reason you buy your season ticket is because you can't get to these games any other way. So that's why, you know, these are the games that the season ticket is worthwhile for and cost the most amount of money. And they're talking about, I'm not going to go. I'm amazed to hear them talk like that. I'm delighted, but I'm absolutely amazed to hear them say, I don't want to go at all because I know what's going to happen. You know, they're more convinced that they're going to lose than I am. And I'm fairly confident that we can get a result, but they're absolutely terrified of this game. You rarely hear them feel that bad. I never felt like that in the 90s at all. I didn't look forward to some of the games. But I also had a sense of, man, this could be our day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I never thought, I don't want to go to that.
But then, I used to think in the 90s, the thing that saved Celtic was having a support who believed who had this faith in something that every logic told you couldn't exist. But they still believed in it. And that's what kept the Celtic fans going in the 90s. It was their faith, the upbringing of it was Catholic schools instilling into people the possibility of something existing that all logic told you couldn't.
Hope is what it instilled in us.
On us, you mentioned the Motherwell game. I thought we were. The first thing after about 10 minutes, I said this is so much better than the Dundee United game. We're playing with so much pace. I thought we played really well first half.
I was surprised that Rodgers went and said he wanted them to go in the second half and up the tempo and things, because I thought we started really, really well. I really enjoyed that game. I enjoyed that first half as much as I enjoyed there were more goals in the second half. But I thought we pinged it about a bit. I thought nobody got anywhere near McGregor. I was quite taken aback at how much space and time McGregor had in that game. You know, and I don't know whether it was Tony Watt that was supposed to be picking him up, but surely we all know what Tony Watt can and can't do, and it's certainly no man mark Callum McGregor for that position. But I really liked the way we were playing. I liked the way we were moving things. I'd love to see Yang make it, but the only thing that I didn't think worked was I don't think Yang contributed effectively. I don't think he contributed effectively yesterday. We were able to carry him, but longer term, that was the only real flaw I thought in either of those two performances. And it's more of a criticism perhaps than I want to make, so I don't want to be too critical because things are going so well just now. But if you're asking me where do things need to get better, another player instead of Yang is a reserve winger, as I think we've given him a run. It doesn't look like it's going to work. There's something in there. There's a degree of talent in there, but I don't think we're going to see it.
No, in fact, I was watching him yesterday as we record this in the St Johnstone game. I was thinking, you're not going to make it as a Celtic player, but I just want you to have just a couple of games where you contribute something tangible to the game. You've had an assist, a good assist that leads directly to a goal, or you've got in the end of something yourself, and it's just, you know, he's trying hard. Interestingly, I think people are less critical of him than they are of Palmer when Palmer gets a game. I don't know whether it's people believe Palmer's got more in him and he's just making the wrong choices and that's bugging them more than Yang, who looks like he's trying and he's just not good enough. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think there is a sense that we know he's trying and we know he's young and we can see his limitations. I think there's a frustration with Palmer and that I think there's an expectation that Palmer was going to provide a wee bit more to us and was a bit more gallus and carried himself like a superstar winger, whereas Yang doesn't carry himself like a superstar winger and we're a bit more forgiving of that on that basis. Maybe that's an irrational approach and maybe Palmer's a lovely human being as well and just is a poor soul and Yang's a nasty, twisted so-and-so off the pitch. But it doesn't feel like that. You know, it doesn't feel like that in the game. You feel as if there's a young guy who's trying and it's just not working for him and there's a guy who's got something and just isn't trying hard enough. And Celtic be forgiven of somebody that's trying more than somebody they think has got it that just doesn't put any effort in. And I think that's maybe the difference. But exactly what you've said. I mean, it's not the Huddle breakdown, so we don't have all the stats to hand. But I can't think of a regular contribution that Yang has made to our attack in terms of assists or goals. You know, I was desperate for him to try and get something yesterday and just as you say, just to contribute and be part of it. I just can't think of anything that he's done significantly. You know, as soon as we flip him and we start to change it about, then other players are doing what they're supposed to do and making a difference. And Yang just didn't quite work for him. To be fair, yesterday a couple of times I thought Bally could have maybe done the overlap a wee bit more. There was a couple of times where he was waiting. And I thought, maybe, and that's the inexperience of the two of them on that wing. And a couple of times you're looking for him to... He goes to cut in, but you want Bally to overlap and then lay the ball off, and it didn't quite work. So he was up against it a wee bit there. If I'm trying to be generous, but I just don't have confidence that Yang is ever going to take one of those positions and make it his own. You know, and nor do I have confidence that he's a particularly reliable backup. Let's see, Ralston's not taking Alistair Johnson's place in the team, but if Ralston's named in the team. At right back, I'm more okay with that than Yang being named as a winger. Does that make sense?
It does, although, I mean, to be fair again to Brendan playing him, I suppose the argument would be Coon's first choice right winger, Forrest's second choice right winger, Maeda's first choice left winger, Forrest's second choice left winger. So when Yang plays, he's the third choice, would be an argument.
It's not a criticism for playing him. You know what I mean? When I looked at the team yesterday, I was like, right, I can see the logic in this. Look, let's hope he does something here. And I think he tried and he put playing. You know, sometimes you watch him play and you think, it's just not working for you at all. Yeah. I think he was certainly putting the effort in, you know, and I was quite happy with that. But he's not, I just feel as if, right, we've tried. I think we know that this isn't going to work. You know, that the writing's on the wall here, and it's just a question of, do we pull the trigger now, or do we pull the trigger on him in the summer and move on to somebody else? But we know we're going to change him sooner or later. I think that's the reality in my head, that I know it's over for him, and he's never really going to make it.
Do you know, again, I always find with players like that, also, you know, he's trying his best and he's trying hard. Unlucky stuff also happens for them, you know. Somebody plays a pass for him, and it just takes a small deflection so that it just doesn't get to him in time, or, you know, he plays what would be a good pass, but the player he's playing it to has checked out of the run because he thought he wasn't going to play the pass. You know, just those minor things that you think, you just need one of these things to work for you, and it's just not happening.
I know, but the more they practice, the luckier they become. I think, good players, the luck goes with them, you know, and even the ones who have limitations, and you look at Maeda, as soon as he comes on the pitch, he's scoring, and he's running about like a lunatic, and he's creating something, you know, he's skying the ball, he's overhitting his passes, but he has an impact.
Yep.
You know, and he's had a hell of an impact so far this season, and yes, he has limitations, but he does so much in a game that he can accommodate all these mistakes and all these overhit passes and underhit passes, and it's just not coming off him because he's got so many involvements in the match that something's going to work for him. Yang just didn't have that. We're getting bogged down in negatives in that game because there was so much to be pleased with. I've not got a problem with him getting a game. When he start him Thursday, I'd maybe look at, depending on how things shape up, whether we, you know, because we've got a lot of games over the next couple of weeks, you know, letting him have another start against Dundee or something like that in terms of the midweek games. But I don't think he looks like he's going to make it, you know.
I don't think we're being negative. I think what we're saying is we'd love him to succeed, and he's patently trying his hardest, but it's just not working.
I was very impressed with Bernardo and Engels yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought the two of them, you know, I thought Bernardo had a good game in the St. Stephen's Day, but faded. And I thought they made the right decision to take him off in the second half. But I thought the two of them looked terrific. Absolutely terrific yesterday.
I thought Engels, after the Motherwell game, had his best game for Celtic. And again, shows you the difference, putting penalties in the back of the net. So last season, when we were going through that difficult period when we were struggling, we had a couple of games where I'm sure it was 0-0 or maybe only 1-0 to Celtic. And we got a penalty and missed it. And actually puts a downer on the team. So you're already not playing well. Then you miss a penalty and you're on a downer. And I thought Motherwell game showed the benefit of having a guy in the team who puts the penalty in the back of the net, because and not to bum up the podcasts, but what was interesting is the Guy Jourdette podcast that I did, he was talking about goalkeeper dependent and goalkeeper independent penalty styles, and how the ones who look at the goalkeeper to the very last second, it's a goalkeeper dependent, so you're looking for a movement of the goalkeeper. And that's what Engels looks like he's had. But in his book, he expands more in his book, he talks about how, but you need to start swapping it over. So Lewandowski had a goalkeeper dependent strategy, but he's dropped into it the occasional goalkeeper independent, i.e. laces through the ball style. And Harry Kane's done the other way around. He used to be a laces through the ball, and he mainly is now, but he's dropped in the odd goalkeeper-dependent one. So the goalkeeper, and the thing I noticed was that against all his penalties to date have been goalkeeper-dependent. He's watched the goalkeeper, and he's hit it roughly to the same side. And against Motherwell, he put his laces through it and hit it to the opposite side. But it just shows you the difference if you've got a reliable penalty taker. the difference it can make to the team.
Far be it for me to give you any credit at all if I can avoid it. But that podcast that you did with that fellow about the penalties, it was dead interesting, and I was watching specifically the Motherwell one when they went to take it, and you could see what that guy had been talking about, exactly what you've just said there in terms of the approach. And you know, Christ, Henry Larsson didn't take great penalties.
No.
That was his weakness, you know. And so to have somebody that can do that reliably and have the confidence to do it regularly, that's invaluable. Because to get that breakthrough, as you say, on the 45th, 46th minute of a game when a team is defending and just trying to force you and slowing the game down, I mean, I am amazed at how much time wasting we have seen since Ange Ball. You know, I mean, I used to get a wee bit of it, but it's now a clear tactic of teams who think, I just need to get to half time and then we just need to get the final 10 minutes and then we'll maybe play a wee bit. You know, if we can stay, just hang on into this game. And so when we get a penalty, as you say, we've got to take it because we've got to change the mentality of the opposition. If we can score without doing that, like we did yesterday, fantastic. But we can't afford to avoid looking gift horses in the mouth, you know?
And of course, in relation to penalties and VAR, which has been the hot topic, the papers were all over the fact that Maeda didn't get a penalty when he got kicked in the head. And he didn't get a penalty when he got shoved with two hands in the back against Motherwell. I mean, that was all over the press.
Non-stop. Delighted that Willie Collum came out and apologised for both those decisions not going our way. And the chief executive of the SFA made a statement on it as well, you know, because apparently that's what you do now when you don't get a decision going for you. They were two really clear decisions. Somebody went and said about the Maeda one, well, he's ducked his head down. He says, well, if he goes for that with his foot and the guy kicks him in the foot, it's a penalty.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Well, Maeda's fault because his head shouldn't be there. But if his foot's there, the guy boots him, that's still a penalty. So it doesn't really matter what bit of him he booted. I did think that the penalty we got was in the Motherwell game was probably the softest of the three. But he does come across him and make contact with him. And if it's a centre-half that's doing that, then it's a penalty. You know, so the fact that it was a goalkeeper did it didn't really cause me any concern. But I thought that the way we were moving the ball about, I actually was of the opinion that they see that team that started the Motherwell game, I was wondering if that was looking like it might be the team that started the Ibrox with, you know, a more robust midfield of McGregor, Engels and Bernardo and Ida up front and going for, you know, let's just go to Ibrox and then just get out of there. You know, if we get a draw, we'll take it. You know, if we can get a wee break in the final 10 minutes, then we'll go for that. But as the game progressed, and again yesterday, Hatate in the last two games has looked like a different player, or looked like the player that we believed he was maybe a season ago. You know, all of a sudden, Hatate in the last two games has been pinging the ball forward, playing really ambitious, really exciting forward passes. The first goal yesterday, what a pass that was. That was an absolute belter. Everything he was doing was coming off. He's such an enigma that you're now thinking, I don't know if we can afford not to start Hatate, but in the Motherwell game, I was convinced that's the midfield three we should start with.
It's amazing that a player can come on to a game a week before, who wants away, a week before the transfer window opens. It's just so, it's just amazing.
Oh, you terribly, terribly cynical, man. Is this where we start saying we might only have one Japanese player by the end of this transfer window? Are we coming out with that now?
Well, we'll get on to transfers gossip, and I know that's what you write about, but I thought we could do that at the end because I was going to ask you another question. You mentioned about the midfield yesterday, Engels and Bernardo and Hatate playing so well. Do you think it might have been also that thing of, you know how sometimes in a group where you've got one person who's a natural leader, that people are a bit almost subservient to the leadership qualities of that person, and you take them out and it frees people up to be the person that they could be. You know, maybe I'm looking into it too much, but I'm just wondering if by taking McGregor out, actually Bernardo, Engels and Hatate
stepped
up and became the players. Listen, of the
I never considered that. I do think that when we made all our substitutions, we lost a wee bit of momentum, you know. But I've not really considered that. But what I did think was it was interesting to see that Engels was popping up on the left and the right.
Yep.
In a way that perhaps he'd been playing very much in those wee sort of triangles wide and the wide aspects of the right hand side of the pitch, and Hatate was playing and he was sort of there was it felt as if maybe just by chance that he was sort of popping up and on the you know the left hand side getting out of the penalty box, on the right hand side getting out of the penalty box, and had a, seemed to have a wee bit more freedom just to go box to box, and maybe there was something different in the maybe rather than have McGregor sitting and two players playing in front of him and an 8 and a 10, then perhaps we had you know Bernardo and Engel sitting a wee bit more even and Hatate playing forward. I don't know, you know, people don't tune into this to hear sort of tactical insight, just to hear random nonsense, which is just as well. But I felt as if maybe there was something slightly different about the way the midfield was lined up without McGregor. It might be as simple as the psychology of I need to step up and take charge here. But you've got to say, Engels has got, what, 5 goals, 8 assists so far this season?
Yeah.
You know, he's got 2 man of the matches in the last 2 games. For folk that we know particularly well, who keep telling us he's a duffer, I don't know, the statistics aren't really showing it, are they?
No, and actually my brother was telling me that I tend not to listen to Clyde, haven't really done it. He was telling me that on the way home after the Motherwell game, they were talking about Engels not being a good value for money, and, you know, had they bought a duffer, and some guy had phoned in and said he was rubbish, and Hugh Keevans, in typical fashion of what he's like these days. Although I did listen to Clyde, because Radio Scotland went straight to the Aberdeen-Dundee United game, so I listened to Clyde because I wanted to hear the Rangers pain after the game yesterday. And I have to say, Hugh Keevan sounded like maybe it's time for a couple of things crossed my mind, listen to it. One, maybe it's time for Hugh to move on. Two, they have a whole raft of people who've, to the best of my knowledge, spend every single match day in the studio and never go to a game. And are commenting on football, the very antithesis of what the Jimmy Sanderson Radio Clyde would have been all about. Guys sitting who never go to a game, commenting the game. Anyway, I understand after the Motherwell game, they were going on about Engels being rubbish. And then they had to come on and say, we've had a number of calls from people telling us that Engels was the man of the match at today's game. So what do we know? But yeah, I thought, he maybe just needed that break of not being the regular first team star and the pressure of being a £10 million Celtic's most expensive player. Maybe just needed that as well.
And I think that we had a go at the Rangers about this earlier, so maybe we just need to wait and see, you know, and no judge players too quickly. He's in a good wee bit of form just now, and he's had 2 good games, so let's enjoy them. It's not going to be for the fact you're bringing a guy in at 20, 21 years of age to a foreign country to start being asked to perform at a really high level. The most expensive player we've signed, the demands on him will be huge, and he's replacing the guy that left for 30 million. And he's a different type of player. And our expectation is, right, let's get this new O'Reilly in and get him doing what O'Reilly did. You know, and he's not going to do that, and he's going to need time to settle. But there's enough signs there. We talked about, we've seen enough of Yang to decide it's not going to work. The exact opposite is happening with Engels. There's enough signs there for us to all be able to see there's a player there. And as long as we use him right, when we develop them properly, the harsh reality is we'll end up selling them to England for £35 uh-huh. million pounds in the next couple of seasons. You know, I mean, he'll get a regular run in the Belgium team. He'll become a big name. He'll be a very influential figure for us, and we'll need to bring a next one through. And that's the way it goes. But while he's here, it's clear that he's got something. He's definitely got something. And I think Bernardo might be the same.
I wonder against the St Johnson game, it looked to me like he was trying to get goals from open play, because his goals have been penalties, I think. If all his goals have been penalties, has he scored anything from open play? Can't think. But I wonder if he was trying harder to get involved in goal incidents from open play, the way he was moving about, as you said, left and right against St Johnson.
I thought there was one where he came in and he was just unlucky. Hatate played a really good ball through to him in the first half, and he just had to stretch a wee bit, and it looked like he just tried to pass it into the keeper's arms, but watching the highlights again, he was trying to stretch to go on it, but he was trying to get by the, you know, get ahead of the strikers, and I felt that actually reflected a tactic that seemed, well, there was 2 things actually that occurred to me about it. The first one is, I felt it was a definite tactic in terms of trying to whip the ball in behind the defence for us to run onto yesterday, that I think that we just hadn't seen enough of that against Dundee United. And also, did you not think it looked yesterday as if, and to a lesser extent the Motherwell game, we've been working on corners.
Yes.
But, you know, Bernardo was so unfortunate that he never scored that goal. What a goal that would have been.
Yep.
You know, it was clear. We build it up. We get it along the edge of the box. We get it across to Hatate. Hatate hoops it, loops it in. Bernardo has ran through. Nobody's picked him up. And his first time, he met it really well. Just unfortunately, the keeper, who had a good game yesterday, I don't think there was enough credit given to the St Johnstone keeper. He pulled off some cracking saves, even though he picked the ball out in it four times. You know, he deserved a goal for that, because that was a fantastic passage of play. And it was great Kyogo was there to get a knock on, because that's what you want a six-yard striker to do. But I just thought that there's definitely been work being done on what we are expecting out of corners, because there was a lot of different... The fact that at the Motherwell game, where we had that wee one where Taylor went and touched it, and the referee didn't realise and called it back and made them take it, which was quite good because Yang made a mug of it. But the fact we things like that, they're obviously doing something with corners, or at least that's the impression I'm getting. What did you think yourself?
We've scored a few goals in corners this season. Scales has scored, Carter Vickers has scored, and again it's that thing of I can't remember who it was. It was one of the managers last season down south, talking about sometimes people think scoring from a corner means it has to come directly across goal. But if the goal comes out of the set piece of the corner and there's been a couple of passes but it's still led to the goal, it's still a goal that's had a corner. So there's two things. One, we have scored a number of goals this season from corners, but I actually now think when we get a corner, we look threatening from them. That's the thing for me. It looks like as the ball's coming in, you think something might come from it.
An example of that was the way the Scales knocked the ball on against Motherwell the other week, and just that ran it in the near post and just that wee flick on. Yeah. He's done that a couple of times, and I want to say it was Maida that got on the end of it, but I'm sure if it's not, somebody will put it right.
It was Maida.
Headed it in. You know, that is, I've not seen enough of that in the last couple of years. And just, I don't know, maybe it's just, again, just one of those things where it's just by chance something's changed and it's running for us a wee bit. But it does feel as if there's a better plan. And that's the type of thing that we must certainly look at. You know, how do we improve and how do we get better than what we're at just now? Where are our weaknesses? Well, we're not scoring enough of set pieces. So let's do a bit of work on set pieces. Let's see what we can do. You know, and you know, we don't bring in a set piece coach or whatever. We just use the quality of the coaching team we've got to go, this is what we think we can get better on. So let's start to improve there. Next, we'll look for something else we can get better on and start to improve there. And I would like to think that corners is an obvious one that we can improve on. In the last couple of games, they've done it.
Well, to again appeal to one of the contributors that we know very well to the site, Gavin Strachan apparently is the guy who's the coach that focuses on the set pieces.
I thought he just sat and played Football Manager on his laptop. That's the way Gavin Strachan has always been described to me. It's like, see that laptop, get rid of that laptop. You think, what is it with a laptop? It's a problem, you know. It's modern technology. Get rid of modern technology of football.
Yeah, Jock Steen didn't have a laptop, so nobody should ever have a laptop ever again.
Didn't have a mobile phone either. Didn't have a modern car. It didn't stop him from winning the European Cup.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get myself bogged down in laptops.
He didn't have power steering in his car.
Snacky's been there long enough now that the arguments about the favouritism because he's dad and things like that, you've got to judge him on his own merits. If he wasn't any good, he'd have been removed a long time before now.
Yeah.
So I think we just accept it. The team is playing, we've said, this is one of the best times ever to be a Celtic supporter. So I'm not saying we can't get better and we can't do things differently, but we can't be overly critical of what's going on around the club just now, and that includes the coaching team.
Well, on the coaching team, and as you know, I never ever call Brendan Rodgers a rat. Isn't the football we're playing just now absolutely marvellous? It's just a joy to watch. And he's achieved something that, you know, some people thought he was too tactically naive to achieve. He's achieved something where we are playing really attractive, enjoyable attacking football, have conceded only four league games. The team who are currently top of Serie A couldn't score against us in Europe. We had one game against Dortmund where every chance they had went in the back of the net. And if you take all of that out, he seems to have achieved almost something that was thought impossible in our time in Celtic. A strong defence and an attractive attacking team. It always seemed to be that you needed to do both, but he's managed to achieve it. So you need to do one or the other, but he's managed to achieve both.
He's an elite level manager. We've said it many a time. Standard, his levels are far above anything we've had before. We loved Ange, but he's above Ange. And that might seem like a controversial statement, but he's a better manager than Ange. And Ange was a smashing manager. You know, He's a better manager than Neil Lennon. He's a better manager than Gordon Strachan. He's a better manager than Martin O'Neill. I'm telling you, he's a better manager than Martin O'Neill. Martin O'Neill was great, but he was of his time. Yep. He was what we needed at that point. Martin O'Neill had a lot of money to spend relative. You know, we'd never in a million years get a Chris Sutton coming to us. We'd never have kept a Henrik Larsson. You know, and he brought in a gap for £50,000 and turned him into a great player. And it was great, but Brendan Rodgers is a better manager than Martin O'Neill. Is it the football's better? Quality's better. It's not long ball stuff. No big strong guys chasing and dominating. He was up against a very good Rangers team. A lot of good players in that team. I'll give him that. But it's better football. It's more mature football. It's sophisticated football. And he's learning as well. Let's be honest. He's, you know, for all we're slagging off, we're compadre. He wasn't wrong a couple of times in terms of serious idea of going into these European Cup ties. And we're just going to keep playing the same way. And we get battered 7 goals here, 7 goals there. Aye, we got to do North Dortmund. But we're learning and we're changing and adapting and we're maturing as a team, and he's willing to finally do a bit of that. You can't argue with that. There's no much you can fault him on at all.
So we've got the January transfer window, and I know this is your bread and butter. Some people might listen to this and not read stuff, and some people might read stuff and not listen. So you're not getting all the subscribers. So what's going to happen in the January transfer window?
So what have we got? I don't think there's any great surprise now about Kieran Tierney, is there? You know what I mean? Like, the only thing is, it's, you know what's annoying? We've been talking about Kieran Tierney coming for 12 months.
Yep.
Kind of fact, maybe, all right, let's be generous and say 6 months. You know, the fact that we brought Valley in on loan means that we had a permanent left back lined up.
Yes. I mean, this is really obvious.
Yeah. Does he come in time for the game on Thursday? Or is it over the course of that month? Or do we not get him until the summer? Or do we do a pre-contract with him? And then we have a bit of horse trading with Arsenal about trying to get him in early and get him off their wage bill. I think there's still a few unknowns there. And if they'll be known inside the club, but they're not known to us at the moment. What do you think?
My gut feel is that we'll not get him early because Arsenal will not want to sell him at the price that we are prepared to pay. Because I understand now that it's become clear that he could go to Celtic, clubs with bigger pockets than us have been asking Arsenal about him. Mm-hmm. Now, as you and I know, he only wants to come to Celtic. It's the only club he's ever wanted to play for.
It's that idea of 120 a week. Maybe I'm being too generous there, but you know, say it's 120. So what's that, about 6 million a year?
No, I think he's on 90. I think he's on 90 a week.
Right, okay. Oh, just the 90, right? Okay,
just the 90.
Fair enough. Just the 90, right? But he'll have made his money. I think he's bought a house in, somebody said, West Lothian, I think. He's bought a place, you know, wee bit further out towards Edinburgh from where he grew up. And he's looking to come back. And so there is definitely a concern about his long-term fitness. I mean, he's averaged 25 games a season, which sounds not bad when you think about it in terms of league term. But what have we played, 50 so far this season?
Yeah.
So that's a concern, you know, which is why, and I know you're not a fan, I'd offer Greg Taylor double his money. I mean, the fact that we are paying Greg Taylor, what, £8,000 a week? And
yeah.
And he's one of the mainstays of the squad. All right, he wants to play football, but, you know, maybe he'll go to a Stoke or West Brom type level and double his cash there. But I just think, double his money, keep him here, keep a Scottish player in the team, because obviously that's going to become a factor for the next set of squad that we're going to announce after we get, well, all being well, after we get out of the group stages at the end of January. We're going to need him, and we're going to potentially need Tierney as well. Also, if we're going to get rid of Welsh to Belgium, which seems to be pretty much a done deal now, and the fact we're bringing back Murray from Queen's Park, and they're saying that they're talking about, do we bring him back to put him into our squad? My understanding was that he'd been lined up with a couple of sort of like championship teams on loan for the second half of the year because he'd been doing so well, and they want to test him at a higher level. But it may be that we need to keep a hold of him. So I just think that we need to be cognizant of the fact that we need more Scottish players in the squad for this next round as well, even if it's only for two more games. You know,
well, much as I'm not Greg Taylor's greatest fan, Greg Taylor as the backup to Kieran Tierney, I don't have a particular issue with.
Maybe it's Greg Taylor that's got an issue with that, though.
Well, you know? Well, and understandable. However, Again, I suppose it's, if you then say to Greg Taylor, no, you're going to be playing lots of games. It's just the really big and important ones you'll not be playing.
Yeah. No, but that's the reality. You'll play against the St. Johnstones. I would anticipate Greg Taylor will play more games at left back if Tierney's there than say Ralston will play at right back if
Yes.
Johnstone's there. And if he has an injury, then I think Greg Taylor is an excellent replacement at left back. But I don't think Greg Taylor is going to be a starter. It's not going to be. We've got two great left backs battling out to see who gets that starting slot. Tierney's getting that spot. The
Yeah.
only thing I could maybe think of is, I don't know, to protect his fitness, do we move him in one? And sometimes he plays as a left-sided centre half if needs be. And Taylor starts, he does that occasionally as part of a back three for Scotland. Probably not. But it also means that idea of the inverted role that Taylor does. Do you see Tierney doing that? Do you see Tierney just constantly getting down that wing?
I see him as being an up and down the wing player. Having said that, he's an intelligent player. I'm sure he's got the ability to change and play. And in fact, maybe Brendan's thinking, if you're not being asked to be a bomb up and down winger, I'll get more games out of you. It could be that Brendan's looking at with him. I just think. It would be, I mean, the only thing from what we've just described, again, you bring in Kieran Tierney, so he's going to take a massive pay cut to come to Celtic, but he's still probably going to go down go beyond 35 or 40 grand a week.
I would assume he'll be the second highest paid player at the club. I think he'll be the vice captain. In the fullness of time, McGregor's got what, two
So
more seasons
I
in him,
think
maybe
McGregor's 31.
31. So by that, I don't want to see McGregor go. I think McGregor may sort of move into the sort of Paul Lambert mode in terms of club captain, and Tierney would be taking on that role as a team captain. And which incidentally, is it just me that thinks that the Hearts manager looks like Paul Lambert's wee brother? But that's never mind that. That's just every time I look at him, I just think, you look like Paul Lambert.
Did you know Paul Lambert's such a Bob Marley fan that he goes on holiday every year to Jamaica?
Yeah, and I was going to mention it in my article on Friday, but you've ruined that by now, so I'm
Wait,
just
I
talking
told you
something
some
more.
people can't listen and read
At the same time,
at the same time.
yeah, I'll come up with some other lie instead. Right,
No, stick it
but
in.
so
Stick it in. Half the people are not going to listen to this and read that.
ahead of Tierney, the left wing. I think that the talk is pretty strong that we're bringing in a winger, eh? And it seems as if, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about. There was a couple of French guys we looked at. There was the young Norwegian guy that was playing. He's playing in Denmark. Oh God, I hardly pronounce his name, so I can't. No point even trying to remember it. The 18-year-old that we went to look at, who seems as though he's got something about him. But it seems that the talk seems to be now that we're going back in to the Belgian fella that was injured, because I think he played a couple of games just at the start of December there. And it looks as if we may be coming back in for him. You heard anything more about
All I know is we are definitely signing a left winger, which is
that?
interesting because we just talked about the issues. So Maeda's our bolted on left winger at the moment.
All right, but
Is Brendan Moyne a
Maeda moves
different
into a
style of play
striker
or?
role. Maeda moves into a striker role when Kyogo goes to the MLS.
There you go.
That's, and we play one, so the talk is that Kyogo's got a chance of a 40 grand a week move, which is what, 15 more than he's on to America again. Didn't he get to go in the summer because we didn't have enough strikers, and literally we only had him as a striker, and all went instead. So that might still be, and you've got to think, what, is he 30 now?
Who?
We're not going to get £10 million for him in a year's time.
Kyogo, he's 31 in 3 weeks' time. No, he's 30 in 3 weeks' time. He's 30 in 3 weeks' time.
Now, lovely wee man. I think it's been great. Possibly the best since Larson. Gary Hooper might have something to say about that. But I think he's been a great striker for the club. But it's time to move forward, and I'm not saying that means that either starts games. But maybe we bring a left winger in. We play Maeda against Tavernier every chance we get, but we bring a different left winger in. I'd love Jota to come back, but he's not coming back because of the tax thing. But imagine Jota on one wing and Kun on the other. That would be phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And Maeda through the middle.
And the thing about, might say people might be getting agitated, as if we're trying to get Kyogo out the door. No, we're just being practical. If Kyogo signs a brand new contract with Celtic, and within a few months of getting a brand new contract with Celtic, changes agent. Agents only make money when they either get their guy to sign a new contract or they move them on. And it's the player who chooses the agent. So why would Kyogo have gone and got himself a brand new agent shortly after he signed a new contract with Celtic? Because an
And
agency said to him.
everybody knows how agencies work, right? Nobody's switching agent. We know, and we don't play the game. You don't switch agent so that they can sit there for 3 years until you need to call upon them.
Yeah.
You switch agent because you're thinking, right, where's my next move?
Yeah.
What's I need somebody that's going to get me to the next stage or get me more money or whatever it is. I wasn't happy with my last deal, and I want something extra. You're right. It's no the nasty agents are shuffling these players about. The player has decided, I'm a new agent. Because I want what a new agent brings, and we all know what a new agent brings. It brings a
Yeah.
move.
And I was talking to my dad about it a couple of months ago, about good chance Kyogo would leave in January. And I think, some of it depends, I suppose, on the timing of it would be they're imploding, so it doesn't make a big difference. But a lot of it would have depended upon the result on January 2nd. If we end up, what is it, 15 points clear we'd be. I'm losing track. Are we 14 at the moment? I'm losing track
We're
of how many
14 points
points
clear
we're.
just now.
Yeah, so we'd be 17 points clear if we won on January 2nd. And then if we beat Young Boys at the beginning of, in the middle of January, we're through to the next round of Champions League football, where for the next round we can put players that we sign in January into the squad. We've won the league. And we have a player who wants to go, my dad says, oh, why would he want to leave? He's from Japan. I'm sure he didn't grow up with pictures of Henrik Larsson on his wall when and Celtic were the only team he wanted to play for. I'm quite sure the prospect of playing in America and the temperatures in America are slightly more appealing than playing here and earning double the wages for doing it.
Yeah,
When
I mean, look,
his carry on.
that idea that playing here, right? So we know that that this idea that oh, Scotland's dead cold, dead dark. Nobody wants to play here. Japan has its moments in terms of its weather. We know that as well, right? We're not saying that's all great. But if you get a chance to go to America, I mean, Edinburgh have just cancelled their Hogmanay celebrations because of the weather just now, right? So that gives you all you need to know. But who wants to play this? That's what I think about Valle as well. Guys saying we should sign him full time. See if you can go back to Barcelona as an 18-year-old. You'd be bonkers to stay here any longer than that. I still can't get my head around the fact that Bernardo's here. The fact of the matter is that I think, based on all the mood music we're hearing, that he's ready for a move and he's ready to go. And they're probably, if we wait too long, we miss our moment and we end up in a Morelos type of situation that Rangers end up in, and we have a player of diminishing return in terms of value who doesn't want to be here, and then has diminishing return in terms of his performance on the pitch. And the fact that there's all this talk, player in France that we're looking at, there's a guy that, and we don't have the name, but there's a couple of guys in France that we're supposed to be looking at as potential new third strikers to come in. It just feels as if the talk of him going, the talk of new strikers coming in, the talk of Rodgers saying he's always looking to add goals to his team. He's making a big statement there. I'm looking to add goals to my team. It kind of ties up with the talk of this new striker coming in. It ties up with the talk of Kyogo going. John Kenny coming back. Has the good run in Europe. Give him a crack at third striker. Put him on the bench. See what happens. Give him 6 months. There's definitely something. I don't know if I buy into the stuff about see Ferguson at Brighton coming on loan. Don't know if I buy into that, but I'm willing to be proved wrong on it. But I do think that it's more likely to be this talk of this French 20-year-old.
And again, it's that thing of we know at some point in the next 2 years we're going to have to replace Kyogo. So you sell him for 10 and you've got 10 million to, and you can go out and buy a 10 to 12 million pound 20, 21 year old who's maybe not quite as good but close to being as good now, who if you have him for 2, 3 years will be better than Kyogo in 18 months' time. Or better than Kyogo would be in 18 months' time. This guy would be, it's a bit of a no-brainer.
The other players that we're looking at, actually, that occurs to me that also fit into that is the there's a big bit of interest in the Danish league for some reason that we're looking to come. There's the Daniel Svensson who's a defender as well, but also can play on that, can play in the left side of midfield, and a young guy, it's Sindre Egli or something, I can't pronounce it right. I'm sure there was interest in him. There was talk of him. I think there's a few clubs been looking at him. But these were the guys that were getting spoken about maybe a couple of months ago, you know, that were on list to go and be checked out. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, where we're looking. Because I also think, and I don't think it'll happen in this transfer window, but I do think we need a 10. I don't think we've replaced O'Reilly, you know, and I don't think Lennon Miller's the answer to that. Because, well, all right, he's playing against Celtic. When we watched him, he was playing against Rangers yesterday. I just don't see the player that the papers talk about when I see him play. You know, maybe he can't influence games because it's hard to influence a game against Celtic. But they've made him captain at his club, so he must have something. It might be that he could potentially be that 10, you know, and do it sort of Rogic. O'Reilly might not be the fastest, but creative. Don't know, you know, but there's a lot of talk about different players in midfield potentially starting to change and giving us a couple of options there. And then what was the other one? There was the centre half. Oh, what was the name of the centre half? I put it in the Celtic Dial Weekly back in October. Kabayas, young guy, 18, plays for a team in Denmark that we're supposed to be looking at, right sided centre half that we're interested in. Slotsiger. So I'm sure there's been discussions about him. These aren't players that will be surprises to anybody that's following talented young players in Europe. But what it does show is that we are in the mix for players of that caliber. You know, you're talking about Tierney attracting attention of, you know, richer, not necessarily better, but richer clubs than us. That's because he's a good player. You know, our unique selling point is it's Celtic and he wants to come back and play for Celtic and be near at home. But There are players like Slozegaard who are attracting attention from your Liverpools of this world and your Man City's of this world. And that's a level we need to get in there ahead of them and go, we can offer you something different than these guys can offer you. They might be able to offer you 6 months on loan at Middlesbrough and you might earn a lot of money but you never play. We can give you games. We will play you. And that's why guys like Engels and Bernardo, success is so important to us. Because the message that we send out to the under-21s across Europe is, come to us and you'll play games.
And the other thing, you know, again, talking to, there's so much that we can offer them in terms of European football. So there's two teams, there's two types of teams that we are competing against for these players. You've got to have a sales pitch to compete against Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, that level of club. And our sales pitch has got to be, you're going to play first team football and you're going to be playing regularly first team football and you'll get some Champions League football. You go, as you say, you go to Man City, Chelsea, Liverpool, whoever. They're then going to stick you out on loan in Middlesbrough. And then you're also wanting to compete against the likes of Feyenoord and Ajax and Sporting Lisbon and Benfica and that level of club. And again, I suppose what you're selling to these people is, one, you're going to be talking to the family and the agent and the player. So your sales pitch has got to be along the lines of, there's a good chance you want to go to England. So one, we're going to help you understand the British culture. We're going to help your, if you're talking to the agent, the parent, we're going to help your young guy understand British culture. We're going to help you them. They will learn British culture. They will learn English. This is all going to put them in good stead for playing in England if that's where you want to go. Also, you're going to be playing for a team who wins all the time. You go to a team that is not winning every week, he might get lost. You come to a team that's winning all the time, it's going to be easier for him to come into the first team and it's going to be coming into a winning team. So for all of these things, you're going to earn decent salary. You're going to win trophies. You're going to win medals. You're going to play European football. You're going to be getting lots of first team action. You're going to learn British culture. You're going to learn the English language. You're going to learn. You know, if you're talking to people from Southern Europe, you're going to learn how to play in shit weather. And you're going to be playing for a team who play on the front foot, who play attacking football. When you leave, I'm sure your move that you're wanting to make, the next move you want to make is to a top half of the English Premiership team. Therefore, you want to be showing that you can play in a team who plays front foot football and attacking football and winning football. And for me, I think at the moment we've got a brilliant sales pitch for these young players if we get it right.
See the other side of that, not just talking about the young players. See if you look at Schmeichel as well. See the old war horses who have done the rounds in English football and perhaps have not really had the recognition that they're due in terms of trophies and medals. And I already, these guys will no think that winning the Scottish Cup is the same as winning the English FA Cup. I accept that. But Schmeichel's on the verge of, I might be wrong here, but is he possibly, if we keep going the way we're going, is it possible he's going to double his total medal tally in one season by being with us in a way that he wouldn't have won anything else previously? We were looking at him yesterday, and my concern, my only concern with Schmeichel was that see if this is the final couple of seasons of his career. Does he see it as an opportunity to be part of something great, or is he a bit bored because he's in a phase of retirement yesterday? Because he didn't have any pressure at all on him. Do you think that that's something we could look at, particularly for that goalkeeping position? Let's start to look at, right, who's playing particularly well in England as a goalkeeper that's coming towards the final couple of years of the career, could come up and do 2 years for us or whatever. You look at Craig Gordon, who's 42, and he's still doing it. Now, I know Remy doesn't rate him and stuff, but you don't need to be an absolute top-class keeper to have a chance of playing in European football with us, to have a chance of winning things with us. You just need to be able to make the important saves at the times we need you to make them. But we could also do something there.
Yes, and just the but the principle of that culture of a player who's learned the best habits. I always like that Ajax seem to have a system. Don't know if they've sort of moved away from it, but they often had a, they seem to have a system where they had players. Kieran Tierney would be the example of it. They come through their youth system, so they know the culture of Ajax, and then they leave at 22, 20, 21, 22, 23, and go play for, one of the wealthy in one of the top five leagues, and then come back at about 29, 30, 31 to the Ajax team. So they're bringing back a player who understands the Ajax culture, is maybe able to talk to the young players about what they needed to do to be able to come through the system, but has also learned all the best habits of playing for an elite team. Now, unfortunately, we've not had enough players who've come through our system and can do a Kieran Tierney, but they don't have to be Celtic players. If you can just get that one or two elite player who comes in, who's learned at the highest level. So you're right, the Joe Hart before him, Kasper Schmeichel now. I said in the last podcast I did with Andrew Smith, I think the big thing for Kasper Schmeichel will be the conversation with the Danish national team for the next squad that they pick. I think they will have a conversation with him about does he still want to be around for the World Cup? And if he does, I think he'll sign a year's extension.
My nephew was in Copenhagen before Christmas for a couple of days with his girlfriend, and the security guy, I think the Celtic jersey on when he was coming back to security, and the guy says, "A Celtic fan on it," and he went, "Martorelli, you need Martorelli back," and he went, "Ah, well, we'll not get him back." And he says, "You need a better goalkeeper," and he looked at him like, "Well, get Schmeichel," and he went, "Oh no, you need a better goalkeeper than Schmeichel," and he just thought, "That's interesting." I just assumed that the Danish nation would be like, "Oh, Schmeichel's a great goalkeeper," but I thought that's odd. So maybe it's not quite as cut and dry. I don't know who's the second string or the guy that's coming up at his back that could take it from him. But it might not be as straightforward as he keeps playing, he keeps getting selected. I'd like to think it would be, but it might not be.
But the other thing that, my perception, the fact that we go and sign Finnish international goalkeeper at 22 at the same time, I mean, make a big deal of the fact he cost £1 million at the same time that we signed Kasper Schmeichel. It really just looked to me like the job of Kasper Schmeichel is to bring him in. But you would have thought as part of that, like yesterday would have been the prime game for him to play against St Johnstone.
Aye, but then there's also a sense that I think we're just before Ibrox and we don't want to make the end silly. All right, we played a couple of second string midfielders and stuff like that. We don't want the end silly because we've seen how other teams that perhaps listen to their sports scientists make terrible mistakes in their first team. But I would have liked to have seen us perhaps if we had drawn against a much lesser light in terms of the Scottish Cup. Perhaps bring him in, and I say that thinking, see the amount of times when you're on a home ticket scheme and we get drawn against, I don't know, Dootler Pumferson or somebody like that, and it's at home, you think, Christ, £20 to go and see this, right? But you know, the Kamala game will be a good game, but it isn't a great game for giving him a run in the cup. Maybe next season we'll start to make him our cup keeper, you know?
Because, well, that's the thing that makes me think that Schmeichel might be staying longer, is that we've not tried him.
That was what I was going to say, because all the talk seems to be that Schmeichel's is going to get an extension, at least one, if not 2 year extension. Because the talk was that they were sorting that out, and they're also sorting out the new contract for Rodgers. I don't know whether that has come from another source or whether it's come from our Celtic Dal Wheatley, because that came from people we know, and we put that through. But it's starting to appear elsewhere now, and it's a lot of talk about 3 year contract. I'm not quite sure if it's exactly a 3 year contract.
I think it'll be a rolling 1 year contract extension.
That was kind of more my thinking, that the T's have been crossed and I's dotted, and it'll just be, we're just going to roll it on and it's a 1 year extension. But folk are saying 3 years. I don't know if I buy that, but certainly I think we're going to have him for longer. And I think if he commits, then I don't see why Schmeichel wouldn't commit for longer.
Yeah. I mean, I think the obvious thing is if Brendan doesn't get an extension of his contract by this summer, all the summer chat will be, there's only a year left in Brendan's contract. I mean, that will just overwhelm the club in terms of noise in the media, because that will be something for them to talk about. And that's the reason why I'm not sure about a three-year extension, because all you're doing is kicking the can down the road by a couple of years on when everybody's going to talk about, is this it or not? And that's why I think it's more likely to be it's a rolling 1 year. Although we did those before, and the press never got their head around the principle of a rolling 1 year contract. But that's by the by. Any other gossip that you're aware of positions, players coming in or out?
So what did we talk about? We talked about striker, we talked about winger, we talked about centre-half, talked about left-back. I think that's us for now. Hatate, as you say, has hit a bit of form and is looking to move on, but I still don't see why we would let him go in this transfer window, maybe in the summer, and I don't think he'll go for big money. You know,
no player under the age of 28, sorry, there's only ever been one player under the age of 28 who signed for a team in a Big Five league for £10 million or more, who's never previously played in a Big Five league.
But then, or who's never previously played in a Big Five league, because I'm going to say, well, Kuhn, because there's talk of like Brentford going to come in for Kuhn in the summer. I think they'll get knocked back the same way they knocked back O'Reilly. He's wished to move last Christmas. That Kuhn could potentially go to England for renting up to £30 million. And I was going to say, he's a bit old to go for that sort of money, but he has played in the German league before.
Yeah, he has played in the top five league before. The one guy who signed, I think, was a Croatian or something. West Ham signed him for £10.01 million. So he just ticked over the £10 million level. But they don't. Actually, it's 25. It's at the age of 25 and upwards. And I think it's just that principle of, why is that the last thing on the shelf? There must be a reason why. You know, I think they just look at it and go, there must be a reason why nobody's previously signed this guy. He's now 25. Because the average age that they're signing players is about 23. So he's 2 years beyond that average age as to why they don't. But as you say, Kuhn has played in a Big Five league. So might be able to do it. But the 30 million, that's the benefit of winning in Europe. You have a crap time in Europe and you sell players for 20, 25. You suddenly do what we've done or likely to do, and you finish in the mid-teens in the new league setup of the Champions League, and we play the next round, and yet a player that you would have done for 20, 22, you get 30, 32. And that's how we'll get the money for Kuhn. Not that I'm desperately wanting to sign. I'm just talking in the practical world of that's the way that clubs at our level have to operate. And you just accept that that's what you're going to do. And I suppose the big thing for Brendan, the big thing for the club is you've got to manage that, because you don't want the manager to be having to be reinvented. You don't want four or five players going in the summer at that price level. Great if you can get the money in, but you don't want four or five because you're having to do too much rebuilding of the team every summer and every window.
Let's shift it forward, because that's only on 20 minutes. Who are you playing on Thursday? What's your team?
Yeah, so team on Thursday would be Schmeichel in goals. I would play Johnson. So this is the thing. It's looking to me like I think Brendan's going to play Scales and Carter Vickers. Trusty did something in the first half. I'm not quite sure what. In the first half of the cup final that Brendan didn't like, and he hooked him off, and put on Scales, and now Scales is playing. So I think he'll play Carter Vickers and Scales, and I think he'll play Taylor, and then he'll play McGregor, and I think it might be Ingalls and Hitati, and then Maeda left, Coon right, and Kyogo through the middle. I think that's the team he'll play. You?
The only issue I can really see is Trusty or Scales. You know, based on what you've said there, as I said last week, I would have thought there might be an argument over who the three midfielders are, but I think Hatate will start based on his recent form. Last two games, I thought he was excellent. And I think the rest of it pretty much picks itself. I think Kyogo will start, and then Ida will come on later on to battle them about a bit.
Yep.
But as you say, the trusty stuff, the fact he changed Trusty at half time and then he subsequently had flu probably didn't do him any favours either. But I didn't think Trusty was that bad. He was trying to build out to the left, but the first half of the cup game, it was hella boring. The fact it just went backwards and forwards between the two centre halves. You know, I mean, where we were sitting, it was right in front of us. And we saw far too much of the ball in that first half in front of us in our
Yep.
own half. And he said he wanted it to go forward, but it's a gamble with Scales though, isn't it? Teams like Scales to be on the ball because he's got a propensity to do something stupid with it, like the penalty risk.
Yeah.
That obviously wasn't a penalty because it was more outside than inside.
No,
He did
just more
score.
outside.
It's more outside, you know, beating it's more outside. You know, there is definitely a risk of using them that way. And I'm just hesitant. Again, I think I'll go back to it. I would take a draw right now if you offer me, and I think I've got a better chance of getting a draw by playing Trusty. But I think we might have a better chance of getting a win by playing Skills.
I also, because I agree, I think Scales' problem is when he gets the ball for more than about 2 3 seconds, which doesn't sound a lot, but actually in a game of football it is. He sort of doesn't know what to do with it and just hits it sometimes. The other thing interesting from my listening to Heart and Hand twice in the last week, to laugh at them, they keep talking about, they were making the point, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it, but they thought that Proper coped with Kyogo in the cup final. But against all the other Scottish clubs, he doesn't cope because he just can't cope with a physical centre, with a physical centre mid, striker up against him.
That's interesting. I could see that, and you could see that yesterday that he's not anticipating all elbows and jumping into people, whereas Kyogo's more a sort of traditional that wee nippy. Aye, never thought about that. I did think that just by dint of the sequence of games that the team he played on Boxing Day would be the team he'd be more likely to look at playing on January 2nd, you know, and play give people a rest for the game yesterday,
Yep.
and the fact that Ida started, but you can never figure out what's going on in his head because he changes his he chops and changes, and he's still quite a recentism type of manager. I think
Yes.
sometimes he's in good form. He's the best player I've ever seen. That you know, he just says stuff that you can never really figure out what he really thinks, but. Kyogo is a better striker than either.
And Kyogo's
So
got a really good record against them in general.
yeah, that's who you've got to go with, really, isn't
Yep.
it? You know, but I do like the idea, as I say, of playing a more secure team to just tire them out a wee bit, and then start to bring on Hatate later on, and bring Kyogo on a bit later on. Well, once they're tired, and you can just run away from them. You know, definitely something in the Ingles, Bernardo, McGregor. To start his half, Trusty to start his half, Ida up front just to hold the ball up, battle them about a wee bit, and once they're struggling a wee bit, then bring on the nippier guys
Yep.
to just run right through them. That's maybe I'm looking to try to score goals in the last 10 minutes. Maybe we should score goals in the first 10 minutes and really demoralise them so the fans are right in their back, ready for another goal,
Booze.
instead of giving them hope for 80 minutes. You know, maybe that's the problem. Just get stuck right into them. Because if we do beat them, I generally could see somebody coming onto the pitch.
Yeah,
You know,
absolutely.
remember the guy that walked. Some people don't talk about it. A guy coming onto the pitch to try to have a go at Brown.
Yep.
That's it. You know, that somehow that's just not discussed anymore. You know, whereas the guy that came on to have a go at Ali Maxwell, in the Marsmar game stuff. Just that frustration, that rage, 3-0 down in 15 minutes. You know, it just chaos. I could see something like that happening.
If they were 3-0 down in 15 minutes, I'd be whacking on to beat for a seven, for us to beat seven against them. I think they would just fall apart.
I just think that we always thought, my dad always used to say that we drove to the games in the 90s. He said, you never know, son, this might be your 7-1, maybe your seven, you know. And we got close to it with Dr. Joe with a 5-1, you know, and a 6-2. But I just think that we were, you know what the biggest problem is? See if we put three by them in the first half, we'll get at half time and we'll maybe score one in the second. See if we put five by them in the first half, we'll maybe score one in the second. We'll not do the same again.
If we were to put five past them in the first half, we would just pass the ball about for the whole second half.
I'd just be happy to just get out there, yeah, and stuff, you know. But no, I do think we'll win, but I will take a draw if you're offering it right now.
All right,
which might seem a bit limp, but I think that's just, but 14 points clear. How much do you want? Do you know what I mean?
As I was saying before the game on Sunday, they're away at Motherwell, and then they play us at home, and then they're away to Hibs, who are currently, they've won four games in a row or something. And we were just saying, they can't keep losing every week. I mean, that's just too much to ask that they lose every week. So since we think they'll lose against us, they'll beat Motherwell today. Well, they nearly lost, so. Anyway, with that, Eddie, I will say thanks very much.
Hope everybody's a good new year.
Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. And also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.